You're listening to Wellness Wednesday, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. This week, Bethel Family Clinic.
Good morning, YK Delta. Julie and I are happy to be here with you from the Bethel Family Clinic.
We are just really fortunate to be able to have this time to connect to Bethel and the community. We'll talk a little bit about who we are and then hopefully just give some supportive information to help people through this very unprecedented and challenging time.
So my name is Jen Peeks. I've lived in Bethel since 2004. I'm a licensed clinical social worker and have worked at the Bethel Family Clinic since June 2019 as one of their behavioral health clinicians.
I'm Julie Thompson. I grew up in Wyoming and have worked as a mental health clinician for 13 years. My husband and I initially came out to Alaska, lived in Aniak from 2001 to about 2005, and then we returned to the Delta in 2017 and have had a great opportunity to just be a part of the community. I worked at AHC, the Yagnovic Healing Center, for 2 years and have been with Bethel Family Clinic for the last year.
So like Julie said, today we're going to be spending some time talking about support and resources and ways to manage our stress and anxiety, especially during this time with the COVID-19 pandemic and all the changes that are coming along with it. So we're going to spend the hour just sharing with you some of the observations we've had, some of the things we've learned, and some ways that might be useful for people as they're continuing to deal with all the changes that happen from day to day.
And as we mentioned, as providers, but also as community members, we really just want to extend support to the residents here in the outlying communities while hopefully being able to provide some resources that will be accessible either on our website or other information we can refer you to. Bethel Family Clinic as an agency is always working towards keeping our community safe while keeping people connected to resources. So that's our main goal today.
So just to give the community a little bit of an update on what the Bethel Family Clinic has been doing and just some of the changes that have occurred for us at the clinic during this time. Currently, the dental clinic has suspended a lot of their procedures just for the safety of the community members and safety of their staff, but they are continually to evaluate the situation and find the best way to continue to provide services to clients. And as soon as any changes occur and as soon as they start taking clients on a more regular basis, we'll be sure to update our website and get that out to folks. Our medical staff continues to see patients. You can call them if you need to make an appointment at 543-3773. Or if you have questions specific to the coronavirus, you can call and talk with one of their medical professionals to ask questions. Maybe you or a loved one has some symptoms you're worried about. You can surely give them a call Monday through Friday and talk with one of them about some of your concerns. As far as the behavioral health staff, we currently have two clinicians that are fully staffed, Julie and myself, and we also have a substance use counselor, Dennis Raines. We continue to see our clients and are accepting new clients. We've transitioned everything to telehealth. And Julie, could you share a little bit on what telehealth is?
So under the current circumstances, telehealth has actually been around for a long time. However, because of the isolation, our inability to access or have our clients access us as resources, the government has allowed us to expand our ability to reach out and connect with people through telehealth. A lot of agencies have been able to even, without already being set up with it, have went to formats like Facebook and FaceTime, or Skype and FaceTime. However, we were already set up with telehealth, and we use a system called Doxy, which is wonderful because it allows us to have secure and safe interaction with our clients without any risk of breach of information or lack of confidentiality. So we really just want to reassure clients that as we continue to offer services, that we can still provide the same level of protection and confidentiality that we do face-to-face.
And if you're curious about the behavioral health services that we provide or are interested in making appointments, you can call our case manager, Lynn Kassman, Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 5 p.m., and she can be reached by calling 543-9860. So like we said earlier, today we're going to talk about how do we cope in these challenging times. I mean, there has been so much change that has happened over the last few months, and so quickly. It feels like every day something's a little different. Every day we hear some new thing in the news. And there's this constant kind of worry and stress about what's going to happen, you know, in a year, but what's going to happen tomorrow. The National Institute for Mental Health says that stress is how the brain and body respond to any demand. Any type of challenge can be stressful, and it's important to know that stress affects everyone.
And if it's an situation of extreme stress, which can occur when we are suddenly required to respond to something we have never had to manage before, which pretty much describes what we've all been going through, it can create all sorts of extreme responses. Part of what's happening that really sets us up for this extreme response is that we have had a complete disruption in our routines. So what used to be day-to-day life is no longer not only day-to-day life, but it's unpredictable. Nobody knows what tomorrow will bring. We've also had a lot of loss, and there's the extreme loss and fear that goes with the loss of life. But again, there's the unpredictability of how we're going to stay safe. Also, other kinds of loss of connection, loss of being able to anticipate even, you know, family vacations. And there are people who feel guilty because they feel sad about that. And yet the reality is that sadness is a natural response, and guilt really is just unnecessary a stress that we are inclined towards. And so part of it is just being kind to yourself and recognizing that we all have things that we're losing, and then that creates a lot of sadness. And then the isolation is another piece that amplifies our feelings of anxiety and disconnection and just feeling disoriented in our day-to-day life.
Julie, I really appreciate that you brought up grief. I think sometimes we don't think about grief in terms of loss of activities or loss of our routine. We associate grief as a response to a death or an actual, you know, physical loss of someone we know or care about. And a lot of people are showing those grief symptoms and are going through that grief process with just the change of their life and their routine and that connection that they used to have with other people.
And we are hearing from a lot of people very similar responses, including grief. Also, people talk about energy. You know, there's this sort of mixed blessing of suddenly having a lot of time, but we have no structure. And then we lose our motivation, and we feel guilty because we feel like we should be doing more with this time. And so there's this vicious cycle of, again, trying to figure out what direction to go, what should be a priority. There's things that if we were in an office, we would get done today, but now, you know, we could probably push off till tomorrow. And so all of these are normal reactions as we're trying to navigate these very sort of new waters that we've all been placed in. And so I know even for myself that the first week, I was very unmotivated. Wanting to get a sense of having been productive by the end of the day was completely blown out of the water. I was preoccupied with a lot of the news and just feeling again, just almost guilty that I knew people had it worse than I did. And so, how about for you, Jen? Have you been hearing or noting anything?
Yeah, I think for me personally, looking on Facebook, all these people that were seeing seemed like everyone was creating something. They were like making, new kinds of breads or being really artsy or learning how to draw or learning how to paint or being so creative. And I just kind of felt this wave of I was just tired. I didn't want to do much of anything for a while. And then I felt bad about that. Like, oh, I should be learning something with all this time I'm spending at home. So I think what you pointed out, Julie, of, being really kind to ourselves, not really setting, any pressure on ourselves to do something or be like this other person, because we're all going through our own way of processing and responding these really, really unique and really stressful times.
Yeah, recognizing that you're doing the best you can. I've heard the same thing, how people with the homeschooling thing, that's a whole nother level. Teachers are feeling overwhelmed because they're afraid that their students aren't getting the support that they need. Parents are feeling overwhelmed because they're afraid they're not being good enough teachers. And again, it can just wreak havoc on our physiological symptoms. And we're going to talk a little bit about the physiology of stress, because it's really important to understand how our mind really connects with our body and our body's response. And so I want to we don't have a lot of time, but I just want to set this up a little bit. We have this whole very complex, just miraculous way that our body responds to threats. And there is two kind of different threats that we're going to be talking about. There's actual threats, which is like the lion that is getting ready to jump on you. And that's where a lot of our primitive brain comes from, was during primitive times when you literally every day were faced with those very present and real threats. But there's also perceived threats. And perceived threats aren't actually necessarily in our face life and death threats, but our mind perceives them that way and our body doesn't know the difference. And so where we are with COVID is that it's kind of in the middle. It is an actual threat, and people are actually dying from it. But a lot of our stress is coming from watching the news and listening to stories and all of the unknowns. So that is more perceived, and we're somewhere in the middle with how we're responding. But our body, what is happening is we have this autonomic nervous system, and we have the sympathetic system, which is the fight, flight, or freeze, and then we have the parasympathetic, which is really the relax and release part of our system. So the sympathetic is like the gas pedal that's saying, okay, we need to fight, we need to do something, we need to run away. And so that's like revving our engine, so our heart rate goes up, our blood pressure goes up, our body becomes tense, and our stomach contracts because we're getting ready to act. So that's what the brain is telling us to do, but we're isolating. And so we really have nothing to do but wait and really shift our attention to taking care of ourselves. And the parasympathetic system is sort of on standby, and that's like our brake. And so there are actual ways that we can engage our mind that will allow us to put the brake on, because right now revving the engine is not helping us. So what we need to do is find ways to push the brake so that our body can relax and rest and use that energy for being more productive.
And it's important to note that all this stress, it affects our behavior, it affects our body physically, how we feel, it affects our emotions, it affects our thoughts. And so it can really put us in a pretty big funk when this is a lot of pressure on us and we're not really sure how to manage it.
Right. And so part of coping is different ways that we actually put our brakes on. And so when you hear different things, like top 10 lists, for instance, and I'm going to touch on those, and then I'm going to talk about how that actually impacts our body's ability to relax. And so some of the things that I know I find helpful and that I know my clients find helpful, that I know people find helpful, research backs up that these things are helpful, is, first of all, having a schedule. We are creatures who have evolved to have our days broken up by certain things. So suddenly you have a whole day, you might not eat until 1, or you might start eating at 10. You know, again, this is very confusing for our body when our body's used to maybe having breakfast at 7:30 or a coffee and then not eating again until noon. A lot of people have talked about being in their pantries all day long. And so, again, very confusing.
Yeah, in the thought of a routine, that's important for us as adults, but also for kids, too, who are used to getting up and eating their breakfast or taking a snack and going to school or catching the bus and having their school routine. So it affects us all from young to old.
Absolutely. And also sleep. It's very tempting, you know, if you don't have your first Zoom meeting till 9 or 10, then suddenly it's like, well, I can sleep in an extra hour. So you're spending, you know, 2 or 3 extra hours at night, you know, binging on your favorite Netflix, which is awesome. Like, I totally get that. I've done it. But I also noticed the next day that it really messes with my energy. So, again, trying to really honor the value of a schedule, but also allowing yourself some flexibility without feeling too guilty. So if I go out for my run at 11 instead of 12, not kicking myself or worrying that I'm going to be seen because I should be in my office. And the reality is that we are all responsible adults, and we know that we're getting our jobs done, and that's the most important thing. And we're also trying to take care of ourselves during really stressful times. I think, you know, touching on the importance of movement, when our autonomic nervous system is triggered, it's saying our bodies need to move. And when we're just sitting at home and that engine is revving and we're not moving, all of that energy has got to go somewhere. And that's where we end up with stomach problems and where we feel fatigued and tired. And I know for myself, when I get out and I start running or walking, I feel better. I literally feel like I get out of my head.
Yeah, your mention on movement, Julie, I was hearing on the radio a couple days ago how other countries have been dealing with the COVID-19. And one of the European countries had for a while a mandate where kids couldn't go outside at all. So they had been in sometimes small apartments or small houses without getting outside and being able to really move and play for weeks and weeks. And they're talking about how that was affecting their mental health. And so living in Bethel, I have felt very fortunate that we have such wonderful access to the outdoors. When the whole COVID-19 started and, you know, there started to be mandates about staying home more, I still got out every day when the trails were good. I was able to take it out running or take my dogs out or go biking while doing the social distancing. And now with the sunshine that we have, being able to walk along the river, being able to just be outside in the yard or get things ready for springtime, I just feel really appreciative that we have that opportunity out in this area.
And again, research backs that up. You know, we've had a pretty rough winter. It seemed like the past couple of months of winter just wasn't going to let go. And the one thing I know about Bethel is people love spring. And being able to get out in nature has been proven to help decompress our levels of stress. And this, again, is hardwired in our brain. We need to be outside. We need to feel the sun on our skin. We need to be able to smell and engage and sense the changing seasons. It's a way of aligning our own biological clocks and our own sort of nervous system to be grounded in the season. And seasons are important, and especially here.
And when you talked about routine, mm-hmm. seasons kind of provide us some routine, too. I look in my neighborhood, and people are getting their boats ready or checking their nets out or getting prepared for possible flooding. And so I think it's been kind of a nice distraction to have the season kind of force us to kind of get in our seasonal routine of what do we need to do to prepare for the summer, to prepare for going to fish camp or the next subsistence activity that's going to be happening. I see people going out bird hunting and getting ready for collecting eggs, and I feel like there's some energy that's coming our way with the season change.
Absolutely. And the thing that I know in mental health is that people start feeling better during the spring. And in part, again, we live in a northern climate where we have a lot of seasonal affective impact. And so, again, just being able to get out and start getting some of that sun and vitamin D and just reengaging with the elements is really good for mental health. Also, as we start connecting with nature, we also need to understand the value of connecting with each other. And while, thank goodness for technology, I can't imagine what this would have been like 15 years ago. We have all these ways of being able to Zoom or FaceTime, and that's wonderful. It's not the same as face-to-face. And so, again, it's recognizing for those of you who are fortunate enough to have pets, I mean, that is great, because to connect face-to-face with another living creature, we are herd animals, and we are part of the human tribe, and that is a very important piece for well-being. One thing that I did last week, my daughter, I think the face-to-face thing can be exhausted, but she wanted me to just be there while she was making her dinner. So I was on, and I was just watching her flit around her kitchen, and it felt really nice. It's a very different energy than having to attend to a face-to-face conversation. So just being creative in how you connect with each other.
What did she end up making, Julie?
I can't even remember. But she's an amazing cook. So I just remember I was really envious, because I think we were having like tuna wraps that night. So.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see how people have been able to be creative, too, and how they connect. I've heard people going back to starting to write letters or sending cards that they make, sending, you know, artwork to each other. And then through our technology, like you mentioned, Julie, with the Zooms and the able to do, you know, FaceTime and other avenues, there's been some really cool things that have happened in the community. I know there's been yoga that's been provided mm-hmm. online. There's been different fitness things that people have started to do, but, you know, maintain the social distance, but realize, hey, we can think outside the box here. We can do things different than we have before and still be able to be healthy and connect. And, Julie, you've been working with Diane McAcker in the last few Fridays doing a mindfulness mm-hmm. Training for folks. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, and actually it's kind of a basic introduction. I was scheduled to teach a seven-week class at KUC, and I, like a lot of people, that those plans changed. But Diane and I had this great opportunity to just collaborate and offer another resource to the community. And you know, we have pretty limited time, and even the six-week offering around intro to meditation has just been scratching the surface, because it's just a very, like, rich way to engage our experience in day-to-day life. And the research around mindfulness and meditation is just fascinating. And with imaging, what they've realized are that these practices, which include a lot of different formal types of mindfulness, so that might be yoga, it might be seated meditation, even like Tai Chi or Qigong or Karate, those are all actually formal ways of practicing mindfulness. There's also a lot of really fun informal ways to practice mindfulness that have the same impact on the brain. And so I just want to talk a little bit about the definition of what mindfulness is. Meditation is one type of mindfulness. It is not the only way to practice mindfulness. So for me, for instance, when I first started, I couldn't sit still. Meditation in and of itself was painful.
Yeah, I totally agree, Julie, and you've been doing it way longer than me. But, you know, research shows, if you do, 15 minutes of meditation a day, I thought, 15 minutes? I can barely get through a minute sometimes, you know?
Right.
So it's important, like you're saying, that it doesn't have to be that. Meditation is just one form, and the length doesn't really matter. It's just being present and finding that quiet space and time to kind of ground yourself.
Absolutely. And more important than the length of time that you practice is that you start establishing a point in the day that you practice. So it's more creating the habit of just carving out, say you carve out 15 minutes, but you practice for two. It's better that you carve it out and you do the practice that is achieving 15 minutes. And in fact, when people try to make it time goal-oriented, they get very discouraged because it's simple, but it's not easy. So you did meditation, but what is beautiful that I discovered in my process is that there's lots of things that we already do that are mindful. So a great example is berry picking. Mm-hmm. Berry picking is a mindful exercise. So really what it's about is that it has to do with awareness. And if we let our mind wander without having any intention around bringing our attention to focus on one point, 70% of the time it goes towards worry and negative thinking and fearful planning. Our brain has a negativity bias, and that's for survival. We actually need it. But what they found with meditation and mindful practices is by intentionally bringing your awareness, say, to picking berries for an hour, you'll notice how your body feels better. And it's because you're engaging the part of the brain that's putting on the brakes. So suddenly your heart rate's slowing down, your blood pressure's going down. And so it's really the practice of bringing your attention and staying focused on something. That really slows down your mind. And by slowing down your mind, your body follows. So this is really important. Our body is constantly responding to our thoughts. Mm-hmm. So first of all, becoming aware of what you're thinking, that's the first point. And then it's being able to say, wow, like I'm really anxious right now. Noticing the body's response to how you're thinking. And then even being curious about the thought, like I saw that thing on the news last night and I haven't been able to get it off my mind. Well, there's a point where is that helpful? Like, can you do anything that's going to change what you saw in the news last night? And then it's being able to say, okay, right now I'm safe. Right now the people I care about are safe. And where do I want to choose to put my energy? And that's where, again, all these things that Jen and I have been talking about, going out and walking, connecting with other people, exercising, being in nature, those are a way of bringing your attention back to something that's in this moment right now, and that creates a relaxation response in your body.
Right. Yeah, I think it's so important when we can recognize that our thoughts, our behaviors, and our emotions, our feelings are not separate from each other. They work together, and they move together. So if we're experiencing, like you're saying, a negative thought, that's going to affect how we feel. It's going to affect what we do. And if we can get in there and kind of alter any one of those things, it can change up the other two.
Yep, that's right. So by going for a walk, suddenly your attention is focused on the walk. However, if you're not paying attention, your mind can still be in the office. It can still be on the news story. And you're out, your body's walking, but you're not seeing, you're not hearing the sounds. You get back to the office and it feels like you've never left. And so mindfulness, I'm going to read this definition. It's one of my favorites by a microbiologist who's done like 30-plus years of research on mindfulness and the impacts on the brain. And he says, mindfulness is the awareness that arises through paying attention on purpose in the present moment, non-judgmentally.
Mm. I like that non-judgmental piece because we tend to jump to judging ourselves so often.
Yeah, and recognizing again that tendency to put our moments in a place of good or bad, you know, or often putting ourselves in a place of self-criticism is super important. And so it's recognizing again that when we start paying attention to how our thoughts are creating a certain response to our body and how we, our power really is in being able to shift that attention. And so whenever you bring awareness to what you're directly experiencing, whether it's through your senses, so say for instance, going out and looking at the sunrise, you can even imagine that right now and noticing how it feels in your body or listening to music that you love. You can see how being in the moment just by focusing on your sense of hearing allows you to be more in your body and your body to relax. Or, yeah.
Yeah. So, Julie, since you've done a lot of work with mindfulness and meditation and have taught some classes, wondering if you'd like to walk us through a couple practices or exercises today.
Yeah, I would love to. So I want to preface this by saying that as you bring your awareness to what is happening in this moment and then asking if what you are thinking is helpful, then in that space you can choose a more helpful response and you can actually change how your body feels in the next moment. So it's trying to do in this moment something that's going to help your body respond as you transition from moment to moment. I want to just talk about some things you can do to set yourself up for meditation, and then we'll go into a very brief meditation. Again, like I said, just setting some time aside. It doesn't have to be a lot, but just a time a day. My husband and I have a coffee meditation, and so we just love being able to be with our coffees, to taste it, to smell it, to just feel the quietness of the morning. Observe the present moment as it is. So don't necessarily think that every moment is going to be pleasant because it's not. But there's value in being able to just feel whatever is happening because then you can choose what it is you need to do to respond to it. Let your judgments come and go. That's what our brain does. Don't necessarily believe the judgments that come up that something is either good or bad. And when you find yourself distracted, remember, it's not that you're bad at it. This is a practice. So just like exercise, it takes practice to develop mental endurance, mental stillness, mental balance and flexibility, and practice. So I'm going to go ahead and if you're driving, obviously, hold this invitation loosely, but just find a place to sit comfortably. And we're going to start with just a simple breath meditation, and then we're going to move to a visualization. So this is going to be very long, but I really just want you to notice as you sit that you just begin to be aware of the stable surface that you're on. So noticing your feet on the floor. Noticing the chair or the surface that's supporting your back and your seat. And really just noticing the sensation of feeling supported, your body just starting to relax and settle, letting go of tension, allowing your body to soften. And then shifting your attention to your breath. So allowing yourself to feel the sensation of your breath coming into your body. And as you breathe in, allowing your body to feel the expansion of the breath in the lungs and around the heart. And as you breathe out, noticing the natural softening and the sensation of letting go that exhalation provides. So breathing in, noticing the cool, dry air, the quality of the in-breath. And as you breathe out, noticing the warmth and the moisture of the out-breath, and that it feels different than the in-breath. And again, just noticing without each out-breath, you have an opportunity to release distractions. Breathing out, letting go of unnecessary thinking. And if you notice a distraction, just bringing your attention back to your next in-breath as an anchor, just your attention coming back into your body. And just feeling the natural rhythm of your own breath without having to change anything. Just feeling held by the support of your own breath, like the waves on an ocean. Your body rises up with each in-breath and settles with each out-breath. The body is so wise. It knows how to breathe, and we can just rest in that wisdom of our body. And as your body starts to soften and relax, allowing yourself to bring to mind a place that you consider to be safe and peaceful. It can be indoors or outdoors. You can have more than one place, but for now, just bring to mind one place. And as you start to connect with this peaceful place, imagine that you're already there looking around and connect to all the visual things that you see that make this seem so peaceful and comforting. Just looking around, look at the colors. Look at the light and the shadows. Look at the shapes. And as you imagine yourself in this safe place, looking around, also imagine the sounds that you would be hearing right now, as if those sounds are coming up in your experience right now, just listening and seeing. Maybe even allowing yourself to sense whatever smells you would notice in this place. Smelling those smells right now. And just breathing the whole essence of this comforting and peaceful place into your body. Just feeling your body's response as you focus your mind on this place, as your body feels the connection of being in this safe, comforting, and peaceful place. And then gently start to release this place, bringing your attention back to your breath coming into your body, feeling your body supported by your chair or wherever you're resting, your feet on the ground, bringing your attention back to the sounds around you, including the sound of my voice, and taking a couple more gentle breaths. And then just gently, when you're ready, if you haven't already, opening your eyes. And now just again, checking in with your body and noticing how it feels.
Well, thank you, Julie, for leading us
in that mindfulness meditation practice. Hopefully some of you out there were able to follow along, or maybe something that you can think about later on today, to take a few moments to ground yourself and to relax and to be non-judgmental about whatever's happening around you today. So we know as clinicians that all these tools that we've been talking about can be really helpful and really powerful, but we're also unique human beings. Not all of these things are going to work for every person. And sometimes people may still need some extra support. Maybe they've tried, you know, mindfulness practice and meditation. Maybe they've tried being outside or connecting with loved ones, but the distress level may be just still really high. That those feelings of fear and anxiety and maybe depression. So we want to end with a few resources to let folks know that there is help out there. There's help within our community. There's help on the internet. That is available if you feel like yourself or maybe somebody you know is continuing to struggle. We want to invite you to check out our website, BethelClinic.org. We posted some resources on there, some local resources for YKHC, for our Bethel Family Clinic, for the LKSD school social workers who are still active and working to support families while education is still in session. We also put a few apps, if people are into apps and using their phones and computers to find different tools to use. We've put a couple on there that Julie and I are familiar with that have helped ourselves and people we have worked with. You can also visit our Facebook page, Bethel Family Clinic. And right now, I know YKHC has a kind of a new resource for folks specific to dealing with stress around these challenging times. There's a phone number you can call at any time, and that's 543-6272. You can also feel free to call our clinic at any time. You know, if you're curious about our behavioral health services or have questions about appointments, you can call our case manager, Lynn, at 543-9860. So, Julie, we're getting close to the end of the hour here. I can't believe it's gone by pretty quickly. Anything you want to add?
Yeah.
Anything we didn't get to that you really want to share?
You know, I think a lot of how we end up getting connected with people, with our clients, is that there are other people who worry about them. And I think, again, during this time, we often are feeling a lot of anxiety around those we love or people that we know are struggling. And often one of the questions is, what can we do to help? And I think first recognizing that it's scary feeling like that you might not be enough, that you might not have the answers, but just being there, being someone that can listen, being someone who can be compassionate, whether you have all the answers or not. Often people aren't looking necessarily for advice. They just want to feel heard. They want to feel understood. Also, just accepting that you may feel inadequate. Because, again, we all, you know, have people that we know are suffering and we just wish we could change that for them. But if you have some real concerns about their safety, you know, first of all, just directly being able to ask them, you know, if they're in danger or if there's potential of self-harm, and then being able to refer them for counseling. That is why we're here. And like Jen said, sometimes these resources are just not going to be enough. And that's from all walks of life. You know, counseling is a beautiful resource that, like physical medicine, is a part of overall wellness. And so we've kept mental health in the dark for too long. And really, we are advocating for people to reach out when they need help or to reach out on behalf of their loved one, because we're here, and that's why we're here.
And Julie, I'm glad you mentioned about safety. I think during these really stressful times, as things are happening around us and feeling like we don't have a whole lot of control, depression can set in pretty heavy. And there are a lot of resources for people to connect with any time of day or night. The National Suicide Lifeline is available 24 hours a day for people, and you can call 1-800-273-8255. That's a resource I give out to everybody I know, because they're available 24 hours a day, whether it's the middle of the night and you wake up anxious, or it's a weekend and you can't settle down, or those thoughts just seem so heavy. You can give that lifeline a call and talk to somebody, connect with somebody over the phone who can listen and be a support and help you through that really difficult time.
Absolutely.
So I just want to, you know, thank KYUK for reaching out to us, asking us to be part of the show today.
Yeah.
It's been a pleasure to talk with Julie and to share some things that we've learned over this time. We want to thank the community as well, because I've just been so blown away by all the acts of kindness that
yeah.
I've witnessed, from the agencies to individual people to the religious groups.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a blessing to
yeah.
witness that.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think it just brings a sense of connection that we're not in this by ourselves, that we are a tribe, and that there are all kinds of tribes that exist, that we are a community of human beings that at the end of the day genuinely care about each other. And I know that helps me sleep more peacefully.
So with that, we'll end our Wellness Wednesday. So back to you, Grady. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to Wellness Wednesday on KYUK, a show about health and wellness in the Yukon-Kuskokwim Delta. Catch us every Wednesday at 10 a.m.